I want to tell you a little bit about myself before I get started. I grew up in Oklahoma, as he said. I have a wife and two kids that are my life. I actually come to know the Lord when I was 8 years old. I'll talk more about that in a little while. But, you know, my dad taught me to work hard. I was a roofer all my life and rodeoed and this and that. But the big deal with me is when I started getting into this hunting, that's what I'm going to share with you tonight. That's what everybody always wants to know about me. How did I get to hunt for a living? Because I've truly been making a living in the hunting industry since early 2000. And so I'm going to share that with you, and it might sound good right now. I mean, right now, Buck Ventures was the number one show on Sportsman's Channel last year. It was actually number one 12 out of 13 weeks in third and fourth quarter. So it was doing good. You know, I started Major League Bowhunter, another show, in 2010. I sold it off in 2016. So everything is pretty good right now, but I'm going to share with you tonight a lot of things that aren't very good of how I got here. And you know, my testimony speaks to me, to men. It speaks to men raising their families right, being the husband they're supposed to be. But anyway, I hope I have the energy to do what I'm fixing to do. Is I'm going to tell you some hunting stories that God's provided for me that, golly, he's taught me so much, and hopefully teach you something. But anyway, has anybody ever been elk hunting? Man, there ain't very few. Anybody want to go elk hunting? Yeah, more there. So anyway, I bet y'all could all relate to that opening day, right? Like, so maybe turkey season's fixing to start, or opening day of deer season, where the night before you're jacked up. I mean, I know I talked to Josiah, and I know how much he loves hunting. So anyway, this elk hunt that I was going to go on a few years back, it's something that I'd put off a long time. I'd never got to go elk hunting because I was always chasing whitetails, because that is pretty much what I know. I chase whitetails. That's what all my sponsors wanted me to do. They wanted me to do that. That's the expert I was. But so I kept getting these invites to go elk hunting, and I never did. And finally, a few years, guys, ago, I accepted an elk hunt. And not only an elk hunt, if you know anything about it, it was right up next to the Vermejo, which is in New Mexico, probably the best elk hunting in the world. It was at the NRA Whittington Center. And so as I prepared to go on this hunt, I got out, like many of you guys probably do, in my backyard, and I started practicing with my bow in June, July, August. And man, I tell you what, I was getting good with that bow. I got to shooting 100 yards, hitting a dot about like that at 100 yards. Man, I was confident. Everything was going good. I was preparing for that hunt. And so September gets here. Right in the middle of September is when we're going to go hunt these elk. And that's right when the rut's happening for big bulls. So we get out there, guys. I get out of my truck. I no more than pull up the Whittington Center. Now, they had never allowed anybody to bow hunt this place. It's the Whittington Center. That's about, you know, the NRA. It's about guns. And they were going to let me bow hunt this thing. But I pull up there, and the first thing they want me to do is go shoot a target. They pulled me to the side. They took me out probably from here to that wall. They got a life-size elk, and they made me shoot this target. And I was feeling pretty, I'm like, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, ain't you ever seen me on TV? I can shoot, you know. And I was shooting this with an audience to make sure I could hit it in the right place. Then they'd go out there, and they'd turn it sideways, and they'd say, now where do you hit it? And I was like, are you kidding me? You've invited me up here, and now you don't even know if I know where to shoot an elk? So nevertheless, my ego, I guess, was already hurt. The next morning, I'm on my dream hunt. Think about your dream hunt. I'm on my dream hunt. We're headed up the mountain. We drive up this old two-track to about 8,500 feet. We get out. We walk up the mountain. I'm jacked up. I ain't had much sleep. We get up there. They set us on a waller, and basically that's a little pond, little wet area where these elk come in and roll. And so I'm sitting there. And it's breaking daylight, guys, and I hear a bull just, and I mean chills on the back of my neck. I'm like, golly, right here. So daylight comes, and I can see this big bull working right towards me. And I'm looking, so in other words, make sure you understand, I'm not an expert elk hunter. I'm an expert whitetail guy. I've been doing TV a long time, but I've never been elk hunting. So I'm probably a lot like you. I've seen it on TV. I've read about it. And I'm on my dream hunt. I sure don't want to mess up in the first few minutes of this hunt. And so I'm looking. I got my glasses, and he's a 6x6. And I'm looking back trying to find my guide, and I can't never find him. And finally, this bull works his way up there, and he gets to about 45 yards, and I just pass him. I just let him go, and I turn to the camera, and I tell the camera, man, I just don't think it's big enough right here 5 minutes into my hunt. He goes off, and he ain't been gone 1 minute, and I hear something like this. I mean, just a big old growl, bugle, and I ain't no expert elk hunter, but I'm like, that's got to be a big bull. I turn to this guy, and he's like, Jeff, that's a big bull. So we take off, and we're going up the side of this mountain, and there's like this old logging road going through there. And the one thing, if you've ever been on a guided hunt, you never guide the guide, right? That's the one thing, and I prepared myself. Do not guide this guide. But we're going up through there, and I'm following him, and I'm sitting there, and I'm hearing, and I'm listening, and I'm like, man, this bull, we're too close to him, is what I was thinking. And all of a sudden, I hear him bugle again. Now imagine, we're working up. It's about like this steep, and there's an old logging road, and about 200 yards up, there's a bunch of evergreens. And finally, I'm like, Josh, that bull's right here. I said, we got to get off. I can hear him walking. So we jump off this two-track that's leading up through there. We get about 7 yards off of it, and we sit down. When we sat down, I seen my camera guy sit down right here, and I knew where he was, but I never knew where my guide was. So right when I sat down, guys, 10 minutes into my hunt now, the giant of giants steps out, an 8x7, probably 375-inch, maybe 380 bull, monster. Got a big old turkey claw on one side, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. 10 minutes into my hunt, and I'm watching this bull, and I just read him right off. He's coming. We had made a few cow calls, and he just steps out, and he's wondering where these cows are, this other bull, and he's coming to fight. And I know immediately I'm fixing to get a shot at this bull. Now, the one thing that I was thinking, I'm sitting here like this. I got this path. He steps right out on that old two-track coming down that mountain, and I know he's going to come right here, but when he gets 20 yards, my angle, if you know anything about hunting, it's not going to be good, right? He's going to be quartering too. So as this bull starts to come, I set my deal on 25 yards. I just roll my sight to 25 yards, and I develop a plan in my mind. My plan was this. He's going to come down this deal. I'm going to draw on him when he gets to about 40 yards. I'm going to let him cross my arrow, get right here as this two-track. When he gets 7 yards, I'm going to spin and just kill him right here. That's the plan. Got to have a plan. As he starts to come down this mountain, he's bugling, spitting, and I mean, just, it's fixing to happen. And all of a sudden, I told you I didn't know where my guide was. He's got a hoochie mama, which is basically a cow call that you can just squeeze. And when this bull gets about 18, 19 yards, he's coming full blast. He passes my arrow right here. I'm watching. He gets right here about 10 yards, and all of a sudden, my guide, for whatever reason, hits that hoochie mama. This bull comes up and he just turns immediately, and he looks and sees me, and he's just looking right here. So I'm right here at full draw. I got a 900-pound animal right here. And you ever heard that saying, you don't want no cheese, you just want out of the trap? That's where I was at, because I couldn't take the pressure. This big bull's looking at me, and I can't turn and shoot him. Finally, this bull, it seems like I hold for 2.5 minutes. He finally jumps, and when he does, I just let down, roll my sight, I step out. I set it to 40 yards, I draw again, and that bull takes off running. And when he does, now my guide did right. He starts hitting that cow call. This bull stops out there, and remember, in the backyard, I was hitting something like this at 100 yards. This bull stops at 60 yards, I'm at full draw, perfect, and I let her go. That arrow is straight, going right at him, looks like it's just gonna drill him. And it's coming right here, and it just falls out of sight the last 10 yards. I shoot him low. He spits it right when he turns. I see the arrow come at him. He takes off down the side of this mountain. And I knew immediately that we were in trouble. I turned to my cameraman. I did my talk. But I'm like, oh, no. And the thing about it is, if you've ever been on a hunt, if you draw blood, a pin drop of blood, that's your hunt. And I walked up there, and I see blood right there. I see blood, and I pick up my arrow right where he spit it out. And I mean, I'm no expert elk hunter, but I know I've tracked a lot of animals. Well, right when I see my arrow and that blood, I'm thinking, it's muscle blood. I shot underneath the cavity. Because see, when you hunt, you hunters know, if you get in the cavity, you'll kill them. But I knew I was underneath that cavity. And I looked down at that blood, and I picked up that arrow, and I was just thinking that. And all of a sudden, I hear this. I mean, that grout. And I turned and down the mountain and the other side, and I put my binoculars up, and there's my bull. He's that turkey claw on one side, and he's chasing. He's got seven cows over there, herding them back and forth. We filmed this bull for another 15, 18 minutes of him running around chasing these cows. Well, my guide says, we got to call the main guide. And I'm like, okay. So the main guide gets there. He says, yeah, we need to track this bull. We're going to have to go after him. And I said, well, so my mind is, I already know that I can only shoot this bull now. But I'm like, we're going to do it smart, right? I've done seen its muscle blood. I've watched him for 18 minutes, and now they're wanting me to go track him. 15 minutes into my doggone dream hunt, I did it. Didn't want to guide the guy. Didn't want to be disrespectful. And we tracked this bull all day. And I knew what I was doing. I was pin drops. The last 3 hours were pin drops, me on my knees. We tracked him all the way to dark, went back to the camp that night. I mean, just sick. My dream hunt, knowing there's no way I'm going to find this bull. I know he's not going to die. The next morning, I get up, and I lose blood right off the bat, and then I just start just kind of looking for him. Now, the one thing I had going for me with this bull, we were on thousands of acres, but was his sound. He had a real weird bugle, you know, that brrr at the end. So as we're hunting this bull, the third day, I'm my lip is about stuck out so far. If I took a step, I'm going to step on it. That's how babied up I was. I was just mad. Well, I'm sitting at noon on the third day. I'm hunting this bull so hard. And I'm sitting there, got a peanut butter jelly sandwich in my hand, fixed to take a bite, and I'm looking over down and up the other side of this deal, and I hear this. And me and the guide looked at each other, and I'm like, dude, that's our bull. And it's like if you ever turkey hunt, you know, a turkey will just fire up about 10 o'clock. That's what this bull did. He just started firing up, and I could hear him. And he was moving, and I could hear him. So we just take off. Now, we had took the truck up to this old abandoned, like, old lodge years ago, and that's where we were parked, like at 10,000 feet. So we took off through the forest there, and we're coming out there, and I come out on the two track, and we'd probably been a half a mile, and I'm just listening to this bull. He's bugling, and all of a sudden, what I think happened, this bull turned his head, and he bugled again, and it caused my guide to say, Jeff, stop, and I stopped, and he said, that bull's going to the other side of that canyon. He's going to come up the other side. We got to get to the pickup and go around and cut him off. And I'm just like, I don't think that's what's happening, but before I even knew it, he left. So he ain't been gone 2 or 3 minutes, and I hear that bull fire back up. So I hit a cow call, and I told my camera guy, I said, dude, he's going to come out right here. So we jump off this old logging road. We get back up. Now we're 25 yards off this logging road, and I just sat down. I put my release on, and I look up, and I can see him right here. It's that same bull, and he's coming right at me. I'm like, dude, we're fixing to kill this bull. This is all God. And I got tension on the string. Here he comes. And all of a sudden, I turn. Something catches my eye. And here comes that pickup. My guide's coming to look for me. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. The bull's right there. He's like 30 yards in there. And I just told Tyler, my camera guy, I go, Tyler. He said, what? I said, can you get that big camera down? He said, yeah. So we just laid down, both of us. Laid down. That truck drove right by us looking for us. I made sure he got by good. I raised back up. I can still see the bull. I hit a cow call. He answers, bugles again. We're fixing to kill it. And it's like a grater, you know, when it backs up, that beep, beep, beep. It wasn't the guide's fault. He was just looking for me. He backs up, spooks that bull, guys. I'm going to tell you, I was heartbroken. I mean, you got to imagine the dream hunt it was. And to come into 3 days of nothing but, oh, my gosh. And I knew it was over then. And one thing about New Mexico, if you hunt private land, it don't matter how much money you got or how much time you got, they'll only let you be there 5 days. Once you start hunting, you got 5 days to hunt. My guide, I went back to my lodge that night, and I'm basically packing my stuff and knew, you know, it was going to be a miracle to find that bull. My guide came about midnight, and he says, Jeff, he said, I got the privilege of watching your video today, and he said, I seen that bull. And he said, there ain't nothing wrong with him. And I said, he said, you know, you've hunted hard. He said, I'm going to let you just go after any bull you want the next 2 days. And let me tell you something. It meant the world to me. this guy went out on a limb and said, okay, Jeff, you can go. You've already wounded one of my bulls. Now I'm going to give you free range again. So away we went the next morning. The next day I hunted as hard as I could, didn't get into much. The last day, with probably an hour left, guys, I'm barefooted. I'm walking down there because I can hear bulls everywhere. I got my camera guy barefooted too, right? If I'm barefooted, he's got to be barefooted. We're got splinters in her feet. We're walking down this ridge. We're trying to sneak up on this bull, and I can hear him bugling over there. I can hear one bugling back this way, and all of a sudden, I get up there, and I'm like, I can hear this bull walking. And I was kind of on this flat, and there was a big meadow he was going to come around. And I just told my camera guy, I said, sit right here. I'm going to run right over here 20 yards. You're going to be able to film right over my shoulder. This bull's going to walk around. It's going to be epic footage. It's going to be unbelievable. So I get set down, my camera guy behind me, and I hear this bull. And many of you use a rangefinder. Well, I always have my binoculars here, and I got a rangefinder right here. And I reach and grab my rangefinder, and I see a bush. And I go, click, 48 yards. I see another bush. Click, 51 yards. I see this other bush, 48 yards. I had 48, 48, and a 51. All of a sudden, this bull comes back. I'd no more than put my rangefinder here, and he comes out. I'm like, dude, big bull right here, probably 350-inch bull. And I just reach, grab my rangefinder. I'm just calm, guys. I'm fixing to kill this bull, no problem. I grab my rangefinder, and I put it on him. Click, click. I just used this thing. Click. My rangefinder will not work. And I'm sitting there, and I mean, my guide has given me this chance. There's no way I can shoot at this bull without knowing how far he is. I can't take a chance of wounding another one of his bulls. He's coming out through there. I'm hitting my leg with this thing. I cannot get it to work. So the only thing I can do, I'm just like, my camera guy, I don't even know what's doing. He's got this monster camera back there filming, and I know he was sitting back there thinking, shoot the bull. That's what we come to Mexico for. And this bull's got all these cows, and I'm just like, he's got to get by one of these bushes for me to shoot him. So he would come, and he would come out like this, and he'd go back and get a cow, and there would be my bush. And he would come to this bush, and I'd draw. And I'd get on him, and he'd just come, and then he'd be too quick, and I couldn't get him shot. So I'm sitting there, it's been 10 minutes. I probably drew on this bull 10 different times. And finally, I see him come back to get a cow, and he's coming to the 51 bush. I set it on 51, and I pull back. I'm tracking him left to right. I'm on him. He's going left to right, and he's coming out there, and he gets right to the bush, and he goes to stop. And when he does, I put it right on him, and I pull the trigger. That arrow's perfect. Only problem, he didn't stop. He paused, and with a big bull, what happens? I shot him right in the buttocks, right there. I shoot this bull right in the rear. My arrow's sticking out that far. This bull runs off, and let me tell you, you think I had a pooch lip earlier? I had a lip hanging down there. I was so mad. You know, you see on the video when I shoot a big deer, thank you, Lord, how easy that is. I'm sitting there, and I'm mad as a hornet. I'm so embarrassed, so ashamed, and my camera guy's been every step with me. He's still holding this big camera because that's what he's trained to do, and he's got to get the reaction from me, and I ain't giving it to him. I've shot this bull. 10 minutes went by. I ain't turned to him. I got tears right here about to come out. I'm just sitting there thinking, I can't believe this just happened to me. I was in the backyard. I was the best bow hunter in my mind that ever lived. The guide gets there. I finally turn around to my camera guy because it's almost like God went like this. It wasn't that he tapped me on the shoulder. It's almost like he just flicked my ear and said, boy, why can't you give it to me now? You know, it's easy when you think all's good. And I did. It really hit me, guys. I turned around and I actually cried. I mean, I was real emotional. And I just turned the camera and I just told it like it was. And I remember we went and had to look for that bull that night. I knew we weren't going to find that bull that night. And I went back to the lodge. We were planning on going back in the morning and knowing it's over, pack my stuff up and get out of there. And we found that bull the next morning in 5 minutes. I shot this bull in the rear. I still don't know how he died. He must have hit a tree and broke his neck. I don't know. But he's on my wall, you know, because you can hit one in the back right there, and usually what happens, you hit an artery, but we know it, right? As hunters, if you hit that artery, they're going to bleed out. There wasn't no blood. This bull laying there dead, I'm thinking. And it was almost like this. This is my lesson in this. John 15:5 Scripture in the Bible says you can do nothing without him. And that's kind of what God was telling me. I didn't have to make a good shot for God. God can do anything he wants, because there's no way I should be able to find that bull that next morning. But it just let me know that I am nothing, nothing without him. And it just taught me so much. And today, when I first started the show, it's like the whole world's watching. We're in the public eye. We got all these sponsors. And it's almost like you got to remember to see the journey. You got to remember to see the sunrise. You got to remember to see the sunset. And if you don't, what's the use of being out there? And that, to me, is how all of us are. But as we, so as I was a kid, kind of going back, at 8 years old is when I asked Jesus in my heart. My mom drove the school bus or the church bus, and I got saved at Vacation Bible School. Like I said, my dad taught me to work. I was roofing. I was doing all this stuff. But when I got a chance to do this hunting show, I jumped on it. I started doing it, and I started liking it. And basically, long story short, is I started it out on a verse. It was 2 Corinthians 5:7, which says, walk by faith, not by sight. And our logo, our motto was shoot by sight, walk by faith. And that's where we started. And that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to do it to glorify God. But as I got going, you know, I was rodeoing. I was roofing with my dad. We made pretty good money. And my wife was happy, my kids. And all of a sudden, I got doing this hunting show, guys. I was getting free bows, free guns, a lot of free hunts, hunting all over the place. And as we went, pretty much the first 2 years, I mean, this is the first deal, guys. Like, if you remember the show Friends or Seinfeld or all that, them guys got paid, you know, what, $1 million an episode? When you're in the hunting business, you don't get paid. You pay the network, and then you got to get sponsors to pay that cost, and then you get more sponsors to make your money or whatever. That's how it works in our industry. So what I did, I went on local TV, and I was on local TV for a year and realized you couldn't make a lot of money. And then all of a sudden, I went to national TV. It cost $44,000 back then, which was a lot of money to me, for sure. And I didn't tell my wife about that. I just made that decision on my own. So don't ever do that, guys. That was not a good idea. But as I did that, guys, all of a sudden, I started out to give it to God. And all of a sudden, I grabbed this steering wheel, and I started steering this steering wheel. It was all about me. It was all about We got to make this work. We got to get more sponsors. We got to get this. And here's what my message was, and to me to this day. This phone right here, it's kind of like a trail camera. Trail camera can be the best tool you'll ever use to kill a big deer. You got a piece of property over here, you go put that trail camera out, it will give you your inventory, right? Or you can put that trail camera out, and then you can go check it every day, and you can run every big buck out of the country. So it can be the best tool or the worst. Same thing with this phone. What this phone did to me, this is the way my life started to go, guys. My wife would cook me a meal. I would come in, maybe at 6:30, and we're sitting there fixing to sit down to this meal with me and my girls, and all of a sudden this phone would ring, and I'd say, oh, it's Under Armour. I got to get this. This is important. And I'd walk out on my front porch, and I might talk for an hour. Many times this happened. And I'd come back in. My food would be in the microwave. She'd have it all wrapped up for me. And I thought it was okay. My kids, anybody have kids that say this? Daddy, daddy, watch. Right? That's what they're always doing. Daddy, daddy, watch this, watch this. And here I was. Yeah, I see you.
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
Oh, yeah, I see you. And you can fool a lot of people. You can't fool your kids. But that's the dad I'd become. Because I was on this thing 24/7. And here's the bad thing, is I thought it was okay. I thought it was okay for my wife to cook that meal and me walk out because, man, I got to provide financially, right? That's how my dad's a great man. But he didn't raise me to be a spiritual leader. He raised me to be a financial leader for my home. And that's what I was. And let me tell you something, guys, as I did this, and you can take your own business, you can take your own work and put it in this same thing that God has taught me. As I was doing this, me and my wife weren't doing very good. And I'll tell you the other thing that happened. Financially, we weren't doing very good. Because I'd got off on this deal that I think God wanted me to do. But I started abusing things, and I started doing things thinking that I had to do all this to make it work. I had to work this extra deal over here to make it work. Let me tell you something. If God's blessing something, you ain't got to do that. I took off down this road, and I'd shot a 200-inch deer somewhere along the way, and it got a lot of attention. We were starting to get, we were producing better video. We were getting more attention. I was getting more sponsors. And in my mind, guys, this is what I thought. If I can just shoot another one of them big deer, all this will be fine. My marriage will be good again. I'll financially be good. Everything will be good. That's what I had in my mind. My wife would come to me this. She'd say, Jeff, we got to go to counseling. We have to go to counseling all along. I'd be like, we don't need no counseling. In my mind, I was thinking, just give me a little bit longer. I'll fix all this. Well, one time, I had a pastor that was just a good old boy. Probably a lot like Brother John. Just a hunter. If you needed to go help somebody to help work, carpentry, whatever, that's the kind of guy he was. He's a man's man. Well, my wife, she came to me, she said, we got to go to counseling. We were in a fight one night, and I said, we ain't got to go to counseling. She goes, I got Brother Dennis, and he's going to come over. And I went, oh, Brother Dennis, you know, my pastor. I was like, yeah, I'll go see Brother Dennis, because I was thinking, we'll go down to Brother Dennis, we'll go tell him, and he'll set my wife straight. That's what I'm thinking. He will get a hold of her. And that's exactly what I thought, boy. I remember going down there thinking, boy, she's in for it tonight. I was kind of tiptoeing in there, boy, and we got set down there, and we started talking, and you know how it is. You start, all of a sudden, we're trying to talk, and we're kind of talking over each other, and he just calms us down there, and I notice he's looking at me more than her. And I'm like, whoa. And he basically, guys, this is what he told me that night. He said, Jeff, he slid me a blank piece of paper over after we done talked to him and everything, my pastor, and he hands me this blank piece of paper, and he says, you need to sign this blank piece of paper. So for what? He said, you need to sign this blank piece of paper, and whatever God wants, give it to him. Sign it over to God. Sign your life over to God. Sign your companies over to God. And let me tell you something, that didn't sit well with me. I'm thinking, there's no way. I get to hunt for a living. We're just now, all this hard work that I've done, we're just now, it's getting to go pretty good. I don't want to do this. And I walked out of there, guys, with my marriage in shambles that night. My wife crying, and in my mind thinking, I can fix this. Because, I mean, probably tonight, if we're all honest, some of you probably got marriage problems. Somebody in here, every one of us got problems. Everyone you meet tomorrow's got problems. And I'm going to tell you, there's only one fix that I know of. I left there that night, guys, with this in my mind. I'm going to go kill me a big deer, and I'm going to get our finances going better, and I'm going to get all this fixed and get it all heading down there, and I'll fix all this. And that's the way I did. I left there, and the next deal I went to Kansas. I went to Kansas after a big deer. October 28th, I'd already went down there and I'd hung this set, guys, and you deer hunters can probably relate to this. I'd found a hackberry tree right on the Republican River, right where she was bending. I had a place where I could pull my pickup up on the north side over there about half a mile off the road. I could park my truck with a south wind blowing right at it. I could jump in this river and I could walk right down the edge of the river, right in the wet sand, all the way to this hackberry that I'd hung a set in. I got to the edge right there, the river bent again, I crawled right out of the river, jumping that hackberry. It's what I called a bulletproof set. My footprints were protected, I had wind in my face the whole time. If a deer did come to that side, it was so low in that river, the wind would blow right over him. It was perfect. I was there, my wife didn't respect me, my kids didn't respect me, but I'm gonna kill me a big deer and fix it all. That morning was October 28th. There was a frost on my windshield that morning about a half inch thick. Perfect. It's October 28th. Do you know anything about whitetail hunting? That is when them big bucks are so frustrated, they're looking for a doe. It's right there where the rut's fixing to happen, but they don't have a doe yet, and they're frustrated, and they're out looking for one. And I crawled up in that hackberry about 30 minutes before daylight. I'm sitting there waiting on this. There's a huge cornfield back this way. And what happens, them big bucks would come out and they'd be looking for a doe and they'd cruise that river. Now, in this set, they could either, when they got up there, they could either turn and they'd cut the corner right there about 120 yards from me and I'd have to call them to me, or they'd come on around the river and I'd kill them without calling them, without having to call to them. So this particular morning, I look up 20 minutes after daylight and I put my glass up, seeing a big deer come, and I look, and guys, here come one of the biggest deer I've ever filmed to this day. He had a back on him about that wide. He had 22 scoreable points, massive, just had a mean look to him, had frost all over his rack, had frost all over his back, and here he comes, and right when I throw my binoculars, I knew he was 200 plus deer, 200 inches and or bigger, and I thought, there's my deer. I killed that deer this morning, everything's okay. And I'm sitting there watching him, and like I said, I have to let him make the decision. What's he going to do? Is he going to come to me naturally, or is he going to cut the corner? So I grab a grunt call. I'm sitting in this hackberry like this. My cameraman's sitting just like this, a big swing arm right in the middle of us, the camera right here. And I look, and I got my grunt like this. I turn just a little bit more. I'm looking at him, and all of a sudden I see, and he's going to cut the corner. So when he cuts that corner, I let him go out through there and get right even with me, and I do something just like this, just a big old grunt, knowing when I grunt, he's going to pinpoint me, so you got to be real still. So I just something like this. Just a big old grunt, and now I'm just held still looking at him. And when I did, boy, he just nailed me right there looking at that hackberry like, what's going on there? And he just basically something like this. He just, and he flickered his tail, and he went on about where he was going. Basically, he's telling me, I'm interested, but I already got something on my mind. So right when he does it again, another deal, I just went, another grunt. Boy, I stop him again, same thing. Flickers his tail. I'm interested, but I got something on my mind. The next thing I do, these are horns. I probably never rattle with something about like this, but this is what I got tonight. But anyway, the next thing I did, I had a rattle bag. So I let him, he's going out there and I turn. I want to get that rattle bag away from my chest where he can't see it move. Knowing again, when I do it, he's going to look. And I just basically grind it, something like this, just right. I'm just like, and just right when I did it, I had to stop. Boy, and he just turns. And he's like, ugh. And again, flickered his tail, went on. But I knew I had him a little bit more. And the third call, anybody know what would you take as a third call? I mean, there's a bleat. Snort wheeze. Most aggressive call on the market. Basically saying your mama's fat. You call somebody's mama fat, right? We're going to fight. And it goes something like this. Your mama's fat. That's the next call I did. He's going down through there, and I went just like that. I mama fatted him. This buck goes just like this. He turns. He don't even stop. Here he comes, and he's running. And how many of you guys been in the backyard, right, with your release on your bow? You can find that little sweet spot every time real easy, right? 200-inch deer's coming in. I was like, gosh, turn this buck camera. I was trying to get it. I can't get on there. I think I'm peeing my pants a little bit, and I'm looking. This buck comes up through there, and I'm watching. I finally get on there. He comes around to 51 yards. I'm getting turned in my stand. The camera guy's eating this up. He makes a rub at 51 yards. And guys, he comes up. I'm right there, and he's coming up through there, and I draw on him at 40 yards, and he's just walking. And like I said, he's a giant. I'm talking giant body. I'm like, and I'm at full draw, and he's coming up through there. I'm right there, and he stops right here. He's 24 steps, and I ain't got a shot. There's a big vine that had come down out of this other tree, and I'm like, I mean, literally, if he could have moved up a bump either way, I'm trying to find a place to shoot him in the neck and the guts. I don't care. And I can't find that spot. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, this buck goes just like this. Wind's perfect, right at his bottom, blowing that way the river. I'm right there, and he went just like this. He went. He got real nervous, and he went. And he looked at me and stared. Dude, he was looking a hole through me. And I'm again, don't want no cheese. I just went out of the trap, got my eyes closed. I can't handle the pressure. And this buck finally, he just backs out, and away he goes. I threw a few more desperation calls at him, but it was over. And I remember I turned to the camera, and I said, that deer just broke my heart. And we started calling him Heartbreak. That was October 28th. I chased that deer till January 1st. Actually, December 31st season end. I had two more encounters with him, three total, but he got away. 200-inch deer, the deer that would fix my life, and he was gone. As that time went, you can only imagine what it was like at home. Because all I had in my mind, I wouldn't fight with her. She would tell me we got to do things, and I'd just be like, I got to kill this deer. And I'm ashamed to stand up here and tell you this. I remember in January, I was in my little office, and I remember looking, guys, and I looked over, and I was in my office by myself that day, and I seen the fax machine with a bunch of white pieces of paper on it. And that's the day my life changed. I crawled over there crying. God just broke me that day. I grabbed a piece of paper. I got me a Sharpie. I took it over on the desk and crying. And I'm going to tell you right now, I signed that piece of paper with everything I had. God, I don't care. You're smarter than me. I tried it my way. It don't work. I signed that piece of paper. Didn't care if I was digging ditches the next day. Whatever. I drove 10 miles to my church, and I handed it to my pastor, and I walked in. When I did, he just kind of grinned. He said, I knew you'd be back in here at some point. I handed him that piece of paper, guys, and that's the day. Now, I don't want to stand up here and tell you everything got hunky-dory right off, because it didn't. But that's the day it started getting better, and I started to give everything to God. Me and my wife, I started gaining trust with her, my kids. And let me tell you something. If you're anywhere near that you're not, this is what I did. I called every one of my sponsors, and I told them this. Monday through Friday, I'm in a meeting with my family after 5:30. Don't call me. Don't text me. I'm in a meeting with my family. Saturdays and Sundays, I'm in a meeting with my family. And let me tell you something. And I'm not sitting here telling you today, if you do all that, God's going to give you riches or whatever. But I'm going to tell you, for me, things started getting better even. Because see, God didn't want my businesses. He just wanted me, as we started, to put him first, for me to use it for a platform from him. He didn't want that, and I realized that. He just wanted me to give it to him. I started doing things better for my wife and my family, and all of a sudden it started getting better and better and better. And today, and this is the biggest thing I got to tell you, it's not a one-time deal. I dedicated my job to God. It's not mine. Buck Ventures is God's. God just helped me to be the best I can be for you. God, I dedicate my wife and my kids to you. Help me to be the best I can for them, for you. But it's not a one-time deal. It goes over and over again, and that's what you got to do. My life today, how I recognize if I'm not following God and Jeff Dinker's got to hold that steering wheel, if my life gets too confusing, I just got to go, whoa, I think I got to hold the steering wheel. And that's what men, I'm going to tell you right now, because my dad, I mean, I believe, I'm not letting us off the hook. We're supposed to provide financially, but we're to provide spiritually. If you're not leading your wife and your kids closer to God, first of all, I believe I couldn't be happy if I wasn't doing that. Truly have peace. There was a young man, was a huge fan of ours, of mine, that he wasn't from where I live, but his dad had got a hold of me, and he had got cancer at 18 years old. A kid, his name was Tyler, and he was in the Army. He got cancer at 18. His dad called me and said, Jeff, Tyler watches you on TV all the time. He said, is there any way that you could go hunting with him? You know, he's got chemo going on, and I said, of course, that'd be awesome. So we started to arrange for me to go hunting with him and us to have this hunt together. And as we went down that road, every time I could go, he'd have something that he couldn't with the hospital. And then every time he could go, I couldn't go. So as we tried to get this done, we couldn't. Finally, I arranged for him and helped arrange for him to go on this hunt in Oklahoma. And he went and killed a really big deer, and he had a ball. And so that was kind of the last I'd heard of Tyler. And you know, I kind of went on about my deal. And so about 2 years later, I'm driving. I leave my house at 10 o'clock one morning, and I was going on a seven-hour drive coming to speak at one of these beast feasts. And I was going to Warren, Arkansas, and that was 7 hours from my front door. So I left at 10 o'clock, supposed to be there at 5 o'clock, and I'm driving down the road, and all of a sudden my phone rings. And it goes something like this. It was Tyler's dad, Nathan. Now, before I get too much further, I want to tell you about Tyler's dad and that family. They were great Christian family. They loved the Lord. I'd seen it in action. I mean, Tyler was just loved the Lord, and that's kind of what they lived for. I mean, it was truly, you know, wasn't somebody just talking. It was somebody walking the walk. And Nathan called me up that morning as I'm driving down I-40 going east, and he says, "Jeff, man, we just heard on the radio that you're going to be around Little Rock, Arkansas." He said, "That's where we are, and Tyler's down here, and he's been real sick for a while now, and he ain't moved in 2 or 3 days, and he ain't made a noise in 2 or 3 days. Is there any way you can stop and see him?" And I'm like, golly. And I said, "Man, Nathan, I can't." I said, "If you'd have called me last night, if you'd have called me a little bit this morning where I could have left early," but I said, "I got 450 people waiting on me down here. I got to be there at 5 o'clock. There's no way." And he's like, whoa, you ain't got to explain. I understand totally. Don't worry about it." So I get off the phone and I carry on about my business, heading right towards Little Rock. And when I get to Little Rock, I need a turn and go 2 hours south. And I finally, it's like God was just wrestling with me. And I was like, I was arguing with him, "God, I ain't got time to go, da, da, da." And finally, I called Nathan back and I said, "Nathan, where you at? Drop me a pin. I ain't got long, but I will come and talk to Tyler." So he drops me a pin, and of course, it's not, I need to go south, it's north of Little Rock. So I pull into Little Rock, I head south chasing this pin. I got the old Chevy, just ears laid back on this thing. Finally find the houses, I pull up to these houses, and the next thing that I'm going to tell you, I don't deserve to be any part of this, but this is what God, I was a part of this. I slid my truck to a stop, guys, and I get out of my truck just like this, and this house is right here, and when I look, these people started coming out of this house, Nathan the dad first, and there's probably 20, 25 people. They're all crying, and they're all staring at me. And I'm going to tell you something, I'm so overwhelmed. I'm sitting there watching this, and they're coming at me crying, and everyone just looking locked onto me. And Nathan comes up to me, his dad, Tyler's dad, great Christian man, and he looks at me, he's gritting his teeth, and he's mad. And he says, "Jeff, why in the world is my son in here suffering? Why has he been suffering for the last 3 months?" He said, he went on to tell me about how good Tyler was, how much he loved the Lord and all this stuff. And he said, "Why is he?" And I mean, I didn't have the answer. I'm overwhelmed. And I'm like, "Man, I don't know." And then about that time, everybody else gets up there and they're all, and all of a sudden we start to walk in and they tell me, "Well, listen, we got Tyler just right inside the door and they got him propped up to die and just trying to keep him as comfortable as they can." And they said, "Jeff, one thing you need to know, though, before you walk in there," he said, "the last 6 months before this, everywhere he went, he told everybody that he hunted with you on that hunt." He said, "And we quit telling everybody he didn't because he believed he did, so we just let him think he did." Dude, I'm on the bird. I'm about to bawl. I'm just about to bust. And I remember, guys, I walked in, I opened that door up, and right when I did, I seen Tyler laying there. And I said, "There's my hunting buddy. And he ain't moved in 3 days, he ain't talked." And when I did, he starts moving, sets up, starts talking to me. You can't really understand him, but I just lost it. I just start crying. And I sat down with Tyler and I prayed with him. And this is what I remember more than anything. So I prayed with him right here, Tyler right beside me, and them 20, 25 moms, dads, stepmoms, stepdads, grandma, grandpas, friends, all down here at the foot of the bed. And when I got done praying, I remember looking up and they were all crying, but I seen something in their eyes. I seen hope. They went on to share. They knew that Tyler was going to heaven. They knew the day that he accepted Christ. And I remember thinking, I thought, because I got two little girls and I don't, if they died, I would cry and cry and cry. But I can tell you right now, the day they accepted Christ, I know they have a heavenly home. I drove on to Arkansas that night, to Warren, Arkansas. I went up there and spoke, and I ended with Tyler's story that night. Something to the effect of the story and just talking about, I know how prideful I am. I know how prideful my dad. And I know sometimes as a man, you're just like, you know what? I ain't walking up there. I ain't going to accept Christ. I don't need that. But I'll just say this. Maybe if you don't know if your son or daughter knows Christ, because it's real. That night, 41 people got saved. God did that. I left there, and Nathan had asked me, why What's going on? I left there. I called Tyler, or I called Nathan as I'm driving off and said, hey, I just got to tell you something. I just told Tyler's story tonight, and 41 people got saved. And he just starts bawling. I got to go. I got to go. And hangs up the phone. He goes and tells Tyler that 41 people had gotten saved with his story, and Tyler died within 5 minutes. And I just never forget being a part of that. And more than anything, the treasure of knowing that my kids are saved. I mean, I'll just tell you guys, I don't think I'm here by an accident tonight. I don't think you're here by an accident. And you know, if you don't know Christ, that's the biggest thing. And if your kids, if you don't know that they're going to heaven, because it's real. There's two choices, heaven and hell. You know, there's a narrow gate. So I got saved when I was 8 years old. Vacation Bible school. I'm the kid running around sweating, chasing girls, whatever. I'm just there. And I remember them talking that night on Wednesday night, and I'm thinking, they were talking about, what if there's no tomorrow and you don't know Christ and all this? And I'm like, what? And I remember Wednesday night kind of going, man, I need to go up there. But I didn't. And then and you know the reason I didn't go up there that Wednesday night is because I didn't think I knew enough about the Bible. I didn't know enough about God, and I didn't think I knew enough. I thought, well, I can't go up there. I don't know enough. Well, Thursday night came along, and God carried me up there. So, and I asked Jesus into my heart that night, and that's my deal that I want to tell anybody. You don't have to know a lot. All it's grace. The Bible says if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord, and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. Now, let me tell you something that I'm guarded by big time. The whole raise your hand and say this prayer, I ain't saying you can't get saved that way, but it's a two-part deal. I'm going to tell you right now, if you've asked Jesus into your heart and your life ain't changed, there's a good chance that was just talk. It's a two-part deal. It's confession with the mouth, believing in your heart, and your life will change. Now, do you become perfect? No. I'm so far from perfect standing up here, but I do know this. I have a heavenly home, and I know where I will be because it's a vapor right here. I'm going to tell you right now, all this hunting and stuff I get to do, I don't care nothing about it anymore. God has taught me so much. I mean, again, I love it, but I care more about just being a tool for Christ to use because, you know, we see, the Bible tells us, if we read it, how bad it's going to get. And I look around and I see all the fighting amongst us. But we know right here, that's where our answer is, guys. There's not gray. There's black and white, and it's right here. And again, I believe I was sent here tonight. I believe you're here tonight. And I ask you, if you need to make that decision tonight, make it. Men, stand up and lead your family closer to Christ. I beg you. And it'll change your life forever. It frees you up, man. I'm going to tell you something. As I carried that burden trying to financially fix my wife, to fix my life, to fix our lives together, that's too much for anybody. But as soon as I give it all to God and just look to him, now my life's not perfect, but it's on him. It freed me up so much. And again, it's an everyday deal. So whatever you're struggling with tonight, I'm telling you, it's real. Pastor John's fixing to come up here. He ain't going to take long. We're going to draw for a prize. But I'm telling you right now, make sure that you're being the leader of your household, men. Make sure your kids have a heavenly home. That's the greatest thing you can ever give them. Because I know we all love them. But I know men, I know how prideful I am. And that's the biggest thing. Romans 10:9. Confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead.